This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Independent media has played a vital role in the popular movement in Oaxaca right from the start. A number of radio stations were seized by the people, then attacked and retaken by the police and the paramilitaries. Jill Friedberg documented many of these battles. She is an independent filmmaker and one of the founders of the Seattle Independent Media Center. And she's director of the award-winning documentary, This Is What Democracy Looks Like. That was about the 1999 anti-WTO protests in Seattle. And more recently, she spent 2 years in Mexico making her 2005 film, Granito de Arena, or Grain of Sand, about the struggle of Mexican teachers to defend public education. And she was in Oaxaca over the summer and fall working on a new film about the Oaxacan struggle. And she joins me in the studio this morning. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
When the teachers started their strike back in June, they had a radio station, Radio Planton, I believe, or I think they called it Encampment Radio. What did they use the station for exactly?
Well, it was a station that had actually been on the air for exactly 1 year and was used to not just to inform the public about the teachers' movement and the issues that they were struggling around, but it was also a space that gave a voice to a lot of organizations and community members that didn't have anything to do with the teachers. So it was sort of like a community radio station would be here. We had a broad spectrum of programming and music, but when the strike started in May of 2006, it became the logistical coordination of the movement, and it also became the station that everyone who supported the teachers was calling into. And as it became imminent that there was going to be a violent eviction of the teachers from their encampment, they couldn't hang up the phone in the studio without it ringing again. Just 24 hours a day of people calling in saying, you know, we support you and we're going to back you if the governor sends in his police. So it was logistical and also cultural.
You said it was like regularly broadcast, and it could have been, if we imagine something like Co-op Radio doing the kind of programming it does, but then becoming the focal point of an actual act of struggle against authority and repression.
Exactly.
So what did happen to the station when it became this focal point?
Well, on June 14th and at dawn, the governor sent in 3,000 state and municipal police to evict the teachers from their strike encampment. And one of the very first things that the police did, the radio station was actually transmitting from the union building, which was about two blocks away, was break into the union building and arrest the people who were running the station and steal and destroy all of the equipment, taking the radio station off the air. And that very same day, the university students who had come down to support the teachers in the street who were trying to fight back the police went out to the autonomous public university in Oaxaca and took over the university radio station, so that the movement was really without a radio station for only a few hours.
Were they able to sustain that broadcasting from the university for a length of time, or
they were able to stay on the air for several weeks, and that became, because the police attack on the teachers was the straw that broke the camel's back, the catalyst that gave birth to this incredible, massive popular movement. The university radio station was really the radio station that was on the air when this movement was exploding, and it became 10 times more the phenomenon that Radio Planton had been, in terms of people calling in now with, you know, denouncements and criticisms, but also calling in from the different municipalities that were having their city halls taken over, saying, you know, we're calling from such and such community and we want you to know we just took over our city hall. So it was also built people's energy and strength and unity. And it was on the air until the first week of August, when it was actually sabotaged by infiltrators. Acid was thrown on the transmitter. And then it was able to get back on the air again in October.
Is the status of university, you said the autonomous university, the traditional status of university autonomy in Mexico, was that really a strength that allowed its continuity of support for the popular struggles?
Definitely, and I would say that came into play much later on when the movement had such an impact in coming around to October, November, that they were starting to use the federal police to repress the movement, and the university itself and the university radio became one of the strongholds for the movement, and they were really counting on the university autonomy to protect them, to prevent the federal police from actually coming on campus and taking the radio off the air.
So that's why the use of infiltration in a more sneaky right. way rather mm-hmm. than a direct
exactly.
police presence was used. In August, the government forces attacked a TV station and a radio station that had been taken over a few weeks earlier mm-hmm. by women activists. Could you tell us more about those two stations and the takeover?
Yeah, I mean, that was an absolutely incredible moment, and it was a really great example of how this movement that emerged in Oaxaca, how horizontal and leaderless it was. A group of women had decided to organize a women's march. They called it a Marcha de las Cacerolas, which they were inspired by the women in Argentina who came out in the streets banging their pots and pans, and they used the university radio station to let women know that the march was happening. So it turned out to be much bigger than they expected, and by now we're, you know, two months into this popular movement that has been in the mainstream media. Either they're saying nothing's happening in Oaxaca, or they're saying there's a bunch of violent vandals, you know, running the streets of Oaxaca. So at the end of the march, the women are fed up with the mainstream media. Somebody has the idea, let's go take over the state television station. And they did. And they were, you know, little ladies from the neighborhoods and school teachers and just this broad spectrum of women. And it was entirely women who marched down to the offices of the state television and FM radio station, asked for an hour of airtime. They didn't give them an hour of airtime, so they said, well then, we'll take over the station. And they had the television and radio broadcasting for 3 weeks straight, showing documentaries that had never been shown before, and people coming in from the neighborhoods and talking about their participation in the movement.
Where did they get the technical resources to,
People in the movement, university students who had been training in communications. There's a lot of indigenous communities have their own radio stations, and people who've been trained in broadcast engineering came down and said, I think I know how to run that thingy-majig. And, you know, there was a lot of skill sharing and capacitation that happened in a really short amount of time. And, you know, there were always lots of technical glitches and
But it must have been thrilling for the people involved.
It was absolutely amazing. I mean, I have recorded their first television broadcast that happened the same night that they took over the station, and it's just this, you know, huge pack of women that packed into the studio and just, you know, started talking and saying why they had taken over the television station. And it was a huge moment for the movement, because it really showed that the direction that things were going.
So you're activist media, you're there doing that filming.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wonderful.
So they were on the air for 3 weeks, and they had established guards at the antennas up on the hill where the transmitters for this radio station and the TV station were located at the base of the antenna. There were 24-hour neighbors and teachers guarding those antennas. So 3 weeks later, some plainclothed gunmen went up at dawn and opened fire, injured some of the teachers who were guarding the antennas, and just shot holes in the transmitters for both the radio station and the TV station, taking them both off the air. And university radio station was also off the air by that time as well. So within hours, spontaneously, neighborhood by neighborhood, the movement took over 12 commercial radio stations.
Wow. In the Oaxaca City?
Yes. So if you woke up on the morning, the dawn of August 21st, the entire AM and FM dial had been taken over by, and this is a very broad spectrum of participants. So there was the university kids that had one student, one radio station, the women with another one, and the, you know, the Maoists with another one, or whatever. You could really get a different discourse. And they gave back all but two of them. They didn't, you know, they weren't going to keep all 12 radio stations. They gave back all two of them. But that, the following night, the governor sent out death squads, convoys of 30 to 40 trucks full of heavily armed, plainclothed, and uniformed police, just opened fire on the teachers and other protesters who were guarding the radio stations, killed one person, and provoked what became the probably biggest cultural and political phenomenon of the movement, which was the establishing of over 2,000 barricades across the city every night that were maintained for over 2 months by people, by the movement and neighbors protecting themselves from the death squads.
Have other radio stations that were commercial, has there been any change in their programming? Have they tried to incorporate in anything this popular upsurge of energy and assertiveness?
In Oaxaca?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was after the women took over the television station, there was several mainstream media outlets closed or changed offices. There was sort of an instant, oh my God, we're next, you know, they're coming for us next. But yeah, several of the radio stations and one of the newspapers changed its line a little bit, not dramatically, but noticeably in terms of being a little bit more quote-unquote objective, if you can even throw that term around. And people noticed it, and people definitely felt like they had scared the really right-wing pro-government media into practicing at least a semblance of objectivity.
When the current governor, pre-governor of Oaxaca State, Ulysses Ruiz Ortiz, came to power, he attacked a local newspaper, Noticias. You'd mentioned newspapers shifting and so on, or radio station shifting. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about the significance of that particular attack as one of his initial actions on his election?
Noticias has always been the best-selling newspaper in Oaxaca, and also then the newspaper that towed the government line the least, and has some alliances with the opposition party, the PRD. And within days of his coming into office, Ulysses Ruiz sent porros, paid thugs, to attack the radio station, and they actually surrounded and blockaded the newspaper offices, and locked the newspaper workers inside for over a month. And when they finally did let them out, they were beaten, and it was very repressive attack on the one of the largest media outlets in Oaxaca State that had refused to toe the government line. And so it was significant in terms of demonstrating what people could expect from this governor. It was also significant in laying the first seeds of hatred within the Oaxacan population for this governor, because not only did his attack on the newspaper impacted the newspaper owners, but down to the people who make very little money selling the newspaper in the streets, they were being persecuted and threatened, and so it really sort of went down through the class strata in Oaxaca City, especially, and that was the first the first of many straws that piled up on the camel's back in his first year of office.
And how did Noticias respond to the other popular actions directed at media taking over, having their own stations, etc.?
The Noticias paper became the paper of the movement, which is not to say that they suddenly were putting protest slogans on their front page or anything like that, but their coverage of the movement was an opportunity for them to get back at the governor. And they were attacked twice during this year's movement. In 2006, armed gunmen shot at the newspaper when people were there gathering the papers in the morning. But it really became, and the sales of the newspaper, skyrocketed, went through the roof, and it became really the newspaper where if you wanted to know what was happening in the movement, you read Noticias.
So I'm looking forward to your film on this. What stage is it at?
It's in the editing stage. I've only been back about a month from Oaxaca, and I've got a lot of footage of a lot of amazing things that happened, and so it's going to take me a while to get it edited, but I'm focusing on this popular media phenomenon as sort of the narrative thread for the film.
Well, we'll broadcast when it happens. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Jill Friedberg. She's an independent filmmaker and one of the founders of the Seattle Independent Media Center. And she was in Oaxaca over the summer and fall working on a new film about the media and the role it played in the Oaxacan popular movements.